the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Never cease! Liberal Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor has actually shown a modicum of intelligence. She ruled nuns should not have to pay for birth control. Or I'm assuming abortions too. No, none at all. She understands the lunacy. No madness here. Just the best in political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries Drive Time on good old News Talk 660 WORL. Lair Adams with you on a rainy post-New Year Thursday. Now, don't let the rain get you down, kind of like the stock market today, because our host is here to de-gloom your day. Christopher Hart!
That's right, folks.
You de-gloomer, you?
We are here, first time for 2014. Hope you had a great kickoff to the new year. I know we did over at Positano the other night. We'll tell you about that in just a second. But thanks again for being with us. So we are the American Adversaries. It is drive time, and it is wet out there, and it is going to get cold out there. So prepare yourselves for that. Of course, it is that time of year. This is Florida winter. It gets wet, then it gets cold, then it gets warm again. And then it gets wet, and then it gets cold, then it gets warm again. And we're going to see that cycle play itself out over the next week rather intensely. So enjoy the weather, but please be careful if you are heading out on the road sometime tonight. Probably be best if you just stay home, but if you have to go out, just be aware that the roads will be wet probably all night long.
Just
so
how cold is it supposed to get, Chris?
Down in the 30s and 40s in some of our listening areas tonight, and not out of the 50s tomorrow.
Hubba hubba.
So make sure you got some warm clothes on when you head out. Okay, folks, as I said, welcome back. We are with you. I guess we should say welcome. We're back. But anyway, 407-774-8255. The year is new, but the phone number is the same. And we're the same fellas, and we have another fella here in the studio with us tonight who's been on the show before. And we're going to talk about that Sotomayor delay here in just a few minutes with him. And, of course, I'm talking about Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. Thanks for being with us, Steve, on such short notice.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. Glad to be here again in 2014.
Oh, yes.
And it was kind of a happy way to kick it off because there we were at Cafe Positano the other night, and I want to thank, if I can remember everybody I saw there, I want to thank JJ. I want to thank Natalie, Cindy, Tony, Will, Lorraine, let's see, Avner and Susan.
Oh, they came by. Great.
Yeah, and there were several others, Mike and Joe, and there were several others who were there. But anyway, everybody who came out to Cafe, and there were others who were there, we understand, they came because of our show, who left before our reservations at 9 o'clock and didn't stick around for the fireworks show, which was fabulous. Thanks to all you great folks who came out and joined us the other night and helped us kick off New Year, the new year. And as we were sitting there talking with Avner and Susan, he looked at his telephone and he says, oh, check this out. Judge Sotomayor just delayed part of the Obama health care, Affordable Care Act. And, of course, we'll talk about exactly the details and what it all means with Steve Gushoff in a second. But it was a nice treat, if you will, sort of an appetizer for the new year.
Totally unexpected.
No doubt unexpected. And it's fairly narrow, and it's very temporary. But as I said, we'll get into those details with Steve here in just a minute. But first, before we do that, I want to congratulate late. The UCF, University of Central Florida, used to be, but now used to be Golden Knights, but now just Knights. UCF Knights did it last night, big time, out there to the Fiesta Bowl. They showed Baylor that they came to play, buddy. And 52-42 was the final score. And really, UCF pretty much controlled the whole game.
And they won, correct?
They won big time, buddy.
Shows you I've been out of touch on this. But
yes, sir.
I remember Mike McBath last week was saying, you know, he'd like him to win, but he just didn't think they had it in him.
And he talked about the quarterback Bortles, and he had a great game, a three-touchdown pass. He had two interceptions, but he had three touchdown passes, over 300 yards passing. UCF pretty much controlled the whole game. I don't believe they ever trailed. If they did, it was just at the very start. It was an excellent game, and they played great defense. You could tell that they really did come to play. And once again, congratulations to them. First BCS Bowl game, and they win. And it was a primetime victory, and it was a resounding one for sure. And Baylor was about a two-touchdown favorite in that game.
Yes.
Did you see any of that last night, Steve?
I didn't watch any of it. I actually went to Boston University, and we don't even have a football team at BU anymore. So I'm very happy for UCF and for the Knights, and I want to congratulate them. But the one thing we are proud of at BU is all of the Olympians from the 1980 hockey team, Mike Arunacioni, Jim Craigness, they all went to BU. So we're really good at hockey, but we don't even have a football team.
All right.
But congratulations, UCF. That is great.
It is. It's a big, 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 big plus for their program. And, of course, Mike's going to be back on in another week or so.
I bet he's pleased as punch. You know, he was saying, you know, they need to not get behind early in that game. And
he was right. And even when they did have the turnovers, because they had already leapt out to a lead and they were able to control the line of scrimmage, they were able to win the game. However, they probably are going to come out as losers when it comes to the bill for the game. It cost evidently about $2 million to take the team out there and the band and play that game. And they have to pay for their allotment of tickets, whether they're sold here or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if they don't sell their tickets, the university still has to pay for them. And evidently they only sold about 7,000 of the 17,000 they had to buy were a lot, quote unquote, allotted. So
that's odd. You would have thought there would have been more attendance from here because it's such a special game.
Well, if it had been one of the bowls that were closer to home, it would have been much better attended. But it was out there in Arizona, and it was farther and more expensive for the students to go. So that's the reality of the situation. And it was the same for other universities too. Ohio State didn't sell their allotment of tickets either.
I was visiting a friend in the hospital just before I got over here on the show, and the thing on TV they were talking about was there was a sports expert saying that every single sport right now is suffering at the box office.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head last week, I think it was, when we were talking with Mike, and you said, there's 35 bowl games.
Yeah.
There's saturation. I mean, the market has got too many bowl games. You know, when I was a kid, you had the Sugar, the Orange, the Cotton, the Gator Bowl.
You could count them on one hand, seemed like.
Basically, two.
Two.
Ten or less. And there was the old Tangerine Bowl here, which is now the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah.
But it was ten or less. So, basically, every bowl game was going to get sellouts, and you do not get that now. Mike talked about the one in Hawaii, which has never been. Hawaii's never been a great football state. Hardly anybody was there.
Mm-hmm.
But there were several other bowl games that were not very well attended as well. Now, the Citrus Bowl was not a sellout, but it almost was.
But the NFL is the same way. I mean, just look today. As of today, Green Bay, mm-hmm. Cincinnati, and Indianapolis, all of whom host NFL playoff games this weekend, have not sold out, and they don't know if there's going to be blackouts there or not.
That's true.
The Packers have, a great, fandom, but do you want to sit, in Green Bay on the frozen tundra when it's minus 15 out this weekend after having paid, $100 or more for a ticket, probably 30 or 40 bucks for parking, 20 bucks for a beer and a hot dog?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if you've got high-def TV and a nice, comfortable living room and you don't have to wait in line for bathrooms,
and you don't have 200 bucks to throw away.
Exactly. So the NFL's in the same boat.
Well, I have to say, as a viewer, and I have to admit, being here, I'm a Florida boy, so the conditions are a lot more nicer down here, and I'm watching football mostly on TV, but for me, I like to see those games out in the cold weather like that. But I can understand, you know, the people who are actually sitting in the stands not wanting to do that. And there may be some difficulty in selling out the Super Bowl this year, believe it or not, because it's in New York and it's an outdoor stadium.
Could be a blizzard. Although they had 100,000 people yesterday in Ann Arbor, Michigan for the NHL Winter Classic between the Red Wings and the Maple Leafs. 100,000 people outdoors watching them play hockey
outdoor
in
hockey.
The snow.
Outdoor
that
hockey.
Was fantastic to watch.
Yeah. And the Rose Bowl did sell out in the Pasadena. So,
yeah, there's some controversy there, too. I mean, besides the gay marriage, there was SeaWorld. Did you hear about that?
No.
The SeaWorld float, protesters against SeaWorld blocked the entire parade until the officers could get them out of there. But they blockaded the front of the float to protest their treatment of PETA and other people and to
right.
protest their treatment. And it messed up the parade also.
Wow. I see.
So anytime you don't like something, get out there and stop the parade for everybody. Ruin it for everybody. That's the new concept.
Well, every now and then those type people get their comeuppance. You know,
you got Al-Qaeda and Al-PETA.
Yeah, there you go. You know, we do have a cold front that's presently muscling its way in. And by the way, the UCF Knights, I believe, are arriving back in town pretty much as we speak right now out there at the Sanford Airport. So hopefully they're going to get a great reception out there.
What was the ship yesterday when they played? Was it really brutal?
No, it was in Arizona. It wasn't bad.
Okay.
No. But there is a cold front muscling in here. But you will be glad to know that the global warming scientists and the other tourists and the crew of that Russian ship that got stuck in the ice down there in Antarctica, which is summer down there, but nonetheless it is Antarctica, but they didn't expect to find themselves in this situation. They've been in this situation since Christmas Eve. They were rescued finally, I guess, yesterday. And
yeah, but Chris,
had to be rescued, brought out by a helicopter.
Yeah.
The ship may now be a permanent part of Antarctica.
That's right. I was just going to say, they came back without one small item. Their boat. And you're right. They're because of the growth of the ice, which they were there to prove that all the ice
shrinking.
Is melting and shrinking.
Oh, they were there to prove it was shrinking.
This was
yes.
proof. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-oh, it just ate their boat.
It would have been kind of neat if they had to stay there, because think of it. It could have been like Gilligan's Island, a three-hour tour, but down to Antarctica. They stay there. Hopefully someone, you know, that's on the boat can make a radio out of a coconut or something like the professor.
But you understand, Steve, why this ship was frozen in, don't you? It's because of man-caused global warming.
Of course. Global warming,
that's right.
More ice. I mean, that makes all the sense in the world, right?
Yeah, well, to these people, it does. But I think the times are changing. You know, the morons can only keep their moronity hidden for so long, and eventually it becomes quite obvious to the rest of us that they are morons.
When they have leaders like Al Gore who reminds us
right.
that the center of the Earth is millions of degrees hot. How many thousands of times hotter than the sun is the center of the Earth?
Oh, if it
were not in Antarctica, though, where those guys work out.
That's right.
Evidently not. Evidently not.
It's colder than outer space, guys.
Okay, folks, before we go to the break, I just want to remind you the Baca ride is coming up, and it's going to be Sunday, January 12th. That's a week from this Sunday. And the Baca is the Bikers Against Child Abuse. And if you've got a bike and you want to be a part of this, or you just want to go down and be a part of the festivities, the ride starts from downtown Disney. Registration is 10 o'clock. It kickstands up at 11:30. That's downtown Disney. $20 per bike. You can't beat that. $20. It's going to end up, and they close down I-4 to take these bikes up I-4, and it ends up down there at Orlando Harley-Davidson, and there's going to be an all-day, there's festivities going on with band, great music,
and
giveaways.
And $20 gets you in there, and, you know, I think they also have food and things like that.
That's exactly right. So go to OrlandoHarley.com to get your tickets and find out more about it. That's OrlandoHarley.com, and that will be Sunday the 12th.
Folks, American adversaries are back to start a new year with you. Please stay with us.
Hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And if you really want to find out what's going on in America, check out the American Adversaries. Tough guy.
And away we go with 2014. And we are live, 407-774-8255. And we are back, the American Adversaries, in drive time. Christopher Hart, Lair Adams, and Steve Gushaw from the Liberty Council are with you now. We're going to talk about this decision by Sotomayor, Justice Sotomayor, here in just a second. But we have Rick on the line, and he wants to make a comment about the Antarctica scientists.
Rick, yeah, right.
The so-called scientists who wouldn't know science if it rose up and froze them in the butt.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, global warming has gotten so bad that now credible scientists are calling for a mini ice age.
Yes, I heard that, yes.
Think how bad this would be if we didn't have all that carbon in the air. Thank goodness they're able to escape because of all the carbon in the air. And the thing about it is anybody who is following the facts instead of the money is attributing the temperature fluctuations to that big yellow orb in the sky.
Yes.
Hey, Rick, I think that those folks that went down to Antarctica, I think they thought that the only ice was going to be in their drinks.
Pretty much. And didn't you read the report that the ice down there has gotten about one-third thicker than it was 10 years ago?
Miles thick, didn't you say, Chris?
Yeah.
It varies from between two to three miles.
Facts? It's such a pest to argue facts like that.
Never let facts get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, well, all right. Thank you, Rick. We appreciate you.
Happy New Year, buddy.
And Happy New Year to you. Absolutely. Okay, Steve, as I said, and by the way, our good buddy Brian Steibel showed up over at Positano the other night, too. He's showing up.
Brian, it's great to hear you're back.
He was looking good. But Justice Sotomayor, first of all, what exactly did she do?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I mean, you mentioned about hearing this news late on New Year's Eve, and I heard about it first thing on January 1st, and I had checked my calendar, guys, to see, was it January 1st or April 1st? I mean, you know, was this some sort of an April Fool's Day sort of deal? And particularly where I see that it's Justice Sotomayor, who is among the most liberal of all the justices on the Supreme Court. Basically, she granted a temporary injunction to the Little Sisters of the Poor so that they wouldn't have to provide contraceptive coverage to employees, because if they did, the only other alternative for them would have been facing heavy, heavy fines.
Now, real quickly, and Little Sisters of the Poor is a Catholic group of nuns.
Exactly. It's a Catholic charity organization based out of Denver. And it's basically a group of nuns that work with the elderly, and the poor elderly in particular, in the Denver area.
This isn't the nunnery itself. This is an organization that they have separate from the nunnery.
It's a charity organization. And there were really two groups. There was the Little Sisters of the Poor, again, out of Denver. And there's also another Illinois-based group, an organization called Christian Brothers Services. And they had filed suit, objecting on moral and religious grounds, saying, look, we are Roman Catholic, and it's a violation of our religious belief if we have to provide contraceptive coverage to employees, our employees. And if we don't do that, then the government is going to fine us big, huge, tens of thousands of dollars and more if we don't do it. And so they filed, and Sotomayor, to her credit, I mean, you got to give her credit, she issued a temporary injunction.
Which is good for how long?
It's good till tomorrow. It's good till Friday. And basically what she did is she granted a temporary injunction which protected the nuns from the HHS contraceptive mandate. Now, here's what's happening is, again, it's a temporary injunction. And what Sotomayor has said is she has said to the government, look, Obama, look, Eric Holder, I'm giving you till Friday morning at 10 a.m. to file your response to this injunction. I want to hear what you have to say about it. And again, you know, if you had told me that Clarence Thomas had done this or Antonin Scalia, I wouldn't have been surprised. But Sotomayor, I mean, maybe she had some sort of an epiphany. The scales were lifted from her eyes, a Saul on the road to Damascus sort of moment. I don't know.
How is it that she's the one who made the decision? In other words, was she the only one that looked at this case? How did it actually end up her making this decision? Delay.
She would have been selected to the Supreme Court to hear any sort of emergency injunctions.
Okay, so she's like on call or on standby.
Similar, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
All right, and now that she has done this, will she be the one to hear the government's response?
Probably, and again, they have to respond tomorrow, and so I will assume that she'll be the one to hear it. And it's a little fuzzy and foggy to know what's going to happen after that. Because here's the thing. You have this temporary injunction. Again, remember, it's temporary. So it's only through Friday. We really don't know what's going to happen after tomorrow. It may be continued. It may be reversed. It's unknown. And it also kind of, you know, folds into the other cases that we've talked about before involving Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood. And those two cases as well involve whether or not corporations should have to provide this sort of contraceptive coverage or not. Now, again, they're for-profit corporations. Little Sisters is obviously a charity organization. So there's a different, but the issue does have some similarities.
Well, how would this particular case of the Little Sisters have been delivered to her and she make a decision on it and not the other ones, per se?
And not the other ones, what, the other justices?
The Conestoga, other cases.
Because those ones, Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, are going before the full court. In other words, each of those cases at some point this year will be going before all nine justices. So, again, hers was a temporary situation. It's really no different, you know, in federal court or state court. There's always a judge basically on call. So if there's some sort of temporary injunction or motion that someone wants at 3 o'clock in the morning, you ring the doorbell at the judge's home and get him to sign it. And so she's the one that was on call for the Supreme Court for this one.
And so just by the luck of the draw, she's the one who saw it. And then, but you said to her credit that she did issue a delay and put the burden, if you will, on the government now to respond.
That's precisely the way to put it. The burden is on Eric Holder and the Justice Department now to say what they have to say in response
to the
injunction.
Well, what is her argument?
What is whose argument?
Sotomayor's argument, you know, against this mandate.
I think what it is it's providing temporary relief. And again, temporary, and it's like I'm highlighting that word a lot, where she's giving them just through tomorrow. And basically what she said to them is, look, Little Sisters of the Poor, you don't have to be part of this as of January 1st. In other words, I'm going to give you a little bit of relief here, a little bit of a delay, a little bit of a break. Justice Department, you got to file your response on Friday. And so the sisters of the Little Sisters of the Poor had from, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, just a couple of days to get some relief. And we'll see what the government has to say tomorrow and exactly what happens going forward after that.
Okay. I have a couple more follow-up questions about this. And then we got a lot more to go tonight. Nostra Dennis will be joining us when we come back from the break. You can join us as well, folks. 407-774-8255.
Oh, come on, gentlemen. We all know the only person who can just change laws willy-nilly is Barack Obama. I mean, he can make a law,
say that, Blair.
We'll be back.
Orlando's intelligent, conservative voice. News Talk 660.
Here is tonight's American Adversary SoundbiteRx.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230. Now, here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Ted, over the New Year holiday, there was a major development in the Chrysler bailout story that is getting very, very little attention from major media outlets. The company was sold. What has SoundbiteRx.com found out about that?
All right, Chris. So here's another example of the American people losing as usual. Here's what happened. About 4.5 years ago, the Obama administration brought in Fiat, which is an Italian company, to keep Chrysler in business as part of the bankruptcy proceeding. And it has just been released in a statement from Fiat that it's agreed to pay $3.65 billion for the roughly 42% of Chrysler it doesn't already own. And they are buying it from, wait for it, the United Auto Workers, the union. And in addition to that, Chrysler will contribute $700 million to the benefits trust of the union over a four-year period. So who's the winner here? Fiat, of course, Chrysler. Their production and their sales are up 18% from 2012 and more than 70% from 2010. And, of course, the government lost because we sold our shares back to Chrysler in 2011. It's a typical Obama administration loss to the American taxpayer.
Now, let me see if I get this right. Fiat gets Chrysler. The United Auto Workers Union gets $3.65 billion plus another $700 million, and the American public gets the shaft.
That's exactly what they get. They get the shaft, as we do in every single deal that we've ever done where there is a bailout under the Obama administration. And it's crazy because Chrysler has gone up. I mean, their sales have skyrocketed 70% over 2010, Chris. Yeah. And here's the thing. We are in this to lose money. That's exactly what the Obama administration has set out. Everyone gains except the American taxpayer.
All right. Thanks, Ted. Once again, it's no wonder why this story is getting very little attention from major media outlets. But, folks, it gets the attention it deserves at SoundbiteRx.com. So, please, get that dose of truth. Go to SoundbiteRx.com. It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
I'm in Central Florida. I like to snuggle with three sexy humps. Christopher Hart, Nostradamus, and Lair Adams. Ooh, the American Adversaries on News Talk 660 WORL. These guys stimulate my brain. Oh, yeah.
We are back. Steve over here smiling, shaking his head. Yeah, tonight will be some snuggling weather, that's for sure, folks. You just heard the weather outlook. Going to be in the 40s tonight, not out of the mid-50s tomorrow, and then again cold tomorrow night. So be ready. Okay, American Adversaries Drive time. Nostradamus, our executive producer, is going to join us in just a minute. I'm Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams. We're talking with Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. Right now about this temporary delay Justice Sotomayor granted. Steve, now that the burden is on the government, if obviously they're going to respond to this, is there any chance that we can read into this that she may be leaning towards extending this delay?
I would not go so far as to read that much into it. Hopefully she will, but it's so hard to predict what the Supreme Court does. And so she may be thinking that, all right, I'll just give them this little temporary, injunction, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that she's going to, continue to rule in the same way in the full cases, Hobby Lobby and Conestoga. But it's interesting because it really raises a larger issue. And let me explain just a little bit more about what we're talking about here. Is the way that the law is written right now is that churches and houses of worship are exempt from the contraception mandate. But any other nonprofit religious affiliated groups, such as any church run hospital, parochial schools, Christian schools, and charities like Little Sisters of the Poor, must either provide the contraception coverage or have a third party insurer provide separate benefits without the employer's self or direct involvement. And so what the Little Sisters of the Poor are saying is that no way, because what this does is it violates our religious freedom. It makes us choose between having to pay onerous penalties, heavy, heavy fines that could put them out of business, or basically give in and violate our religious beliefs. Because what the government has been saying, what Obama has been saying, is that if you're not a church or a house of worship and you want to try to get out of these, of providing contraceptive benefits, what you have to do is you have to self-certify. You basically have to obtain an exemption from the law, and you have to prove to the government your religious faith is the bottom line. And so Little Sisters, as part of their argument, was saying, we're against this self-certifying. Why should we have to prove the veracity of our religious faith to Barack Obama and the Justice Department? If we have to provide any sort of contraceptive coverage, whether it's directly or indirectly through some other third party, that still is something that violates our religious beliefs. And this is something that we have said all along at Liberty Council, that Obamacare, more than anything else, is not about insurance. It's not about health care. It is a violation of the religious beliefs and religious rights and religious liberties of Americans. That's what's at the crux of this issue. And so I give the Little Sisters of the Poor a lot of credit, for having the courage to stand up and fight it.
Well, I didn't understand that angle of it, that much depth of the religious significance of this side of it. And isn't that ironic that these nuns would have to prove the veracity of the trueness of their faith to an administration headed by a president that we must simply accept because he says so, that he is Christian, even though he hardly ever goes to church, did not go to church this Christmas, and was raised in a Muslim household.
Look, we hear all the time from this administration, from a lot of people, about bullying and how bad bullying is, whether it's in schools or workplaces or any place else. This is a clear example of the Obama administration bullying nuns.
If just being a nun doesn't prove your faith, buddy, I don't know what else will. Let's bring in Nostradamus, who's a Catholic himself, into this conversation. Nostradamus.
Yeah, let me just quote from Ephesians, "By your fruits you shall know them." That's all I have to say about Obama and his faith.
Dennis, what did you think about this decision? I mean,
Yeah. I'm wondering, Steve, if you could tell me this about it. We've been hearing that volunteer fire departments are in danger of being closed down because they don't cover their employees, quote unquote. They're the volunteers who help fight fires at no pay. My wife volunteers at a place called Shepherd's Hope, and it provides medical services to people who can't afford them. How would this ruling or how would the law itself affect nonprofits like this?
Well, it depends how a group like that is affiliated and how it considers itself. And is it considered a nonprofit religious affiliated group or a secular group? That's a key component of this. Because in the Little Sisters of the Poor, they are part of the Roman Catholic Church, and so they consider themselves religiously affiliated. In the example you're giving, you tell me. In other words, is that considered a religious group? Do they self-define as religious or not?
Yeah, in this case, they are supported by a variety of charities, including churches, but not exclusively churches.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're religious in affiliation. I mean, that's great if they're supported by them, but you can still be secular and be supported by churches.
Right, and they provide services, of course, to anyone regardless of their own belief.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a ruling like this would probably not apply to them, unfortunately, because they're obviously doing very, very good work. Because, again, this is very, it's very specific and very narrow, where it's applying just specifically to nonprofit religious-affiliated groups. So, again, Little Sisters of the Poor, they're part of the Roman Catholic Church in Denver. The other group that was part of this, Christian Brothers Services as well. And so, again, it's very narrow in scope and in time as well. Now, philosophically, I agree that a group like the one you just mentioned should be able to be exempt. Because, again, it goes back to the fact, what right does the government have to tell you or me or any of these groups to basically give any of us a litmus test of whether we're religious or not? That's what this comes down to.
Steve, let me ask this question. Let's assume for just let's do a little, you know, pretending here, a little wishful thinking. Let's assume that the sisters win this case. Mm-hmm. Does that have any bearing on the rest of the law?
It's hard to say right now. In other words, it could, and again, if you look at the other big cases that the Supreme Court is going to hear early this year in terms of Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, which are both for-profit corporations, but, you know, even if Little Sisters wins here, and again, they're nonprofit, they're not for-profit, even so, the attorneys for Hobby Lobby and for Conestoga, they can bring in the similarities of argument. To me, there are some where, again, in both instances, whether you are a for-profit or a non-profit, if the government is trying to tell you or have some sort of litmus test for whether you're religious or not, it's violating your religious beliefs. Frankly, I mean, you should be exempt whether you're non-profit like the Little Sisters or for-profit like Hobby Lobby. What difference does it make? I mean, who's gonna be the one that makes this litmus test? You know, is Obama going to say, okay, Reverend Al Sharpton, you're the one that's going to decide who's religious or not? Are you, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you're going to decide who's religious or not? I mean, where does this go at this point? It's the government deciding whether or not you're religious.
Would there be any chance that this would set up some sort of legal precedent that groups other than religious groups could perhaps use to argue against the law?
Or even individuals.
Well, sure, because that's Hobby Lobby. Again, Hobby Lobby is a secular company. Now, they say that we are a Christian company. In other words, you know, the people that are running Hobby Lobby, the Green family, they are all Christians, conservative Christians, and they're saying that, yes, we are a for-profit corporation, but at the same time, we hold strongly to our Christian beliefs.
I see.
So
yeah.
You could have that sort of dovetailing. It's too soon to tell right now.
Okay.
But again, that's where there could be some similarities.
And what we need to do now is watch for what happens tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And now, does she hold court in her chambers, or how does that all actually work?
Well, the government's going to have to file their response tomorrow. Of course, they're going to file a response, and she'll have to review that. And at some point, you know, she'll render a decision based, you know, after the government response. But I don't know precisely what time it's going to be.
It could actually be done via email or something like that if she's not in Washington, D.C.
Well, I mean, it will be some sort of a printed decision.
Okay.
I mean, they'll hand something out.
All right. Dennis, any more questions on this subject matter before we move on?
No, I'm just looking forward to maybe Duck Commandos Incorporated filing an exemption.
Good point.
They're not religious, but they're people of faith.
Indeed they are. Steve, I want to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
There was a decision, I guess, by the California Supreme Court today about a guy by the name who actually has the same name as a professional golfer, but is not the professional golfer, Sergio Garcia, who's an illegal alien, was approved by the California Supreme Court today to practice law in California. How unusual is that?
Chris, what state was that again where this happened? Could you repeat that?
Well, Larry calls it Califrancia, but you...
Do I really have to get into any more detail? I mean, it's California. You know,
I would have thought that if a person were a fugitive, so to speak, that they couldn't practice a law in a court of law.
One would have thought, wouldn't they? But this is the same state. We just sued Jerry Brown recently because he basically said that Christian counselors are prohibited from saying anything negative about homosexuality to any young people that they're counseling, even if it benefits the young person or if they've been sexually molested. It's California.
Will the Liberty Council file? Do you anticipate filing any suits because of this new bizarre law in California where a kid can decide what their gender is and go into their bathroom of choice?
Probably. We'll probably be involved in that. You know, because if it's a violation of someone else's rights or religious liberties are being infringed, and someone, let's say a Christian is saying, I'm not going to go into a bathroom where someone else who just self-selects which bathroom they want to go into, that violates my religious freedom, yeah, we could potentially be involved in that.
Okay. All right. We'll see where that goes. Okay, folks, but don't go away because we have a whole nother segment to go. And Nostradamus has a couple of predictions for this year he didn't get to the other night. So we'll hear those when we come back as well. Please don't go away.
B. Brian Blair here, folks, and I wrestle professionally all over the world. I'm a former champion, and I know champions when I see them. Here are the best in politics. The American Adversaries on Orlando's AM 660 WORL.
Thank you so much, B. Brian Blair, of course. Larry Adams here with Christopher Hart. And in the studio with us, on the line, too, we have Nestor Dinsman in the studio with us. We have Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. And, Dennis, we were talking with you a moment ago. What's happening here with the UCF Knights? You got some information for us?
Yeah, I do, but let me just first get the two predictions that I forgot to
say.
I wrote them down on Tuesday. I didn't actually say them over the air. The first was that on New Year's Eve 2014, a year from Tuesday, the American Adversaries would still be on the air giving the answer to all of Central Florida. And the great thing about that prediction is, if I'm wrong, I won't be around to be told I'm wrong. And the other one was, in an upset that shocks the sports world, UCF will defeat the Baylor Bears. I predict a final score of 52-42.
Gosh.
I didn't get a chance to say it.
You're really amazing there, Dennis.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm good at that. Yeah, they are actually, the team is back in Orlando. They had a 5:30 kickoff of a celebration over on campus at the Wayne Dench Center, which is right next to Bright House Stadium. And I predict that there will be merriment going on until the wee hours of the morning tomorrow.
Which morning?
Yeah. You take your pick, because right now they're off. School doesn't start again for another week and a half. So. God bless them. And I said on the air, how the heck did UCF beat Louisville a couple weeks ago? Now I want to say, how the heck did South Carolina beat UCF earlier in the year?
I was going to say, they finished up the year with only one loss, and it was to South Carolina, who won the other day at the Citrus Bowl against Wisconsin.
Had they won that game, they could be a top five team. Yep. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And they're going to definitely be in the top 10 now, I'm sure.
Because half of the teams ahead of them in the polls are going to lose because of the way the bowl games shake out.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it was a whale of a season, for sure.
Yeah.
Dennis, we, before Christmas, did a little toy drive, fishes and loaves, or loaves and fishes toy drive with Steve Gideon of the Apopka Police Department. And it went over pretty well. It went over real well, as a matter of fact. And he sent his thanks to our audience and everything. But he was listening to us, I guess, Sunday night, when we were talking about how America needs a dose of manhood. And he sent us a little something, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And this is great. I'm going to try to get this cleaned up and presentable in a place where we can actually post it on the website. But he just basically sent an email with his thoughts. He calls it 10 Necessary Manly Skills. Some of these are survivalist-based. Some of them are actually more philosophical. But I'll list each one, and if you want to know the details about a particular one, stop me.
Okay.
Number one, know how to use and maintain a firearm. Number two, know how to defend yourself and others. This is separate from the use of firearms for a reason. Defending yourself with or without a handgun. Number three, know how to make an intelligent argument. Number four, know how to feed yourself.
Now, hold on. That's going to leave out half the men in America right there.
That's intelligent argument?
Yeah.
He says here, don't start an argument with things like, well, I feel that, or in college they told us, or, well, you're nothing but a... Yeah, no, don't do that. Start your arguments with, it's been my experience that, or, well, when I did it, or what's worked for me is, in other words, speak from your own experience when you present an argument about anything.
Well put.
That makes sense. Number four, know how to feed yourself. You know, meaning fishing, hunting, all that kind of stuff. Know how to clean and dress an animal, even.
Like the Duck Dynasty guys do.
That's right. Number five, know how to make a fire out of nothing. Number six, know basic first aid. Number seven, know how to build a shelter. Number eight, have a marketable skill. You don't need to be a college graduate. At least learn how to detail a car or how to landscape a lawn, something that will help you earn money for yourself. Number nine, here's a rare one, be responsible for your own actions.
Ooh.
Number 10, be humble. That could be one of the hardest of those to learn. And a lot of great thinking went into this, and I can go into details on any of these if you'd like.
Wow, that's great. You know, my dad would fit all of those.
Really?
Including the ones about, you know, feeding yourself and going out. Because he grew up hunting in the woods of Georgia.
Yeah, I couldn't dress an animal, but I think I could start a fire.
Yeah.
I would venture less than 1% of our listeners would know how to do that, and that's probably a lot better than the average listener.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, did you guys know that before the Duck Dynasty guys, do you watch Duck Dynasty, Steve?
A little bit.
Okay. Before they started doing that TV show, they have some videos out that are evidently in very high demand amongst the hunters and other people like this, where Jeff, one of the sons, followed Phil Robertson around, the old man who got you know, the hot water and all that, as he would go hunting. And they are very graphic hunting videos, so graphic that, you know, most people wouldn't want to watch them. But, for instance, when Phil sometimes shoots ducks, sometimes when you shoot a duck and you knock him out of the sky, it doesn't kill him. Mm-hmm. And so what Phil would do in order to kill him was bite him in the neck and break their neck.
Well, I've heard people wringing their neck. I never heard of biting them. Oh, Ozzy Osbourne used to do that.
That's right. And Dracula.
Yeah. Essentially, it's the same thing. Yeah. So, you know, they've known the screen for a while. We just didn't know that part about them. Dennis?
That's right. In Steve's piece, the piece he said, know how to feed yourself. He said, people who kill only for trophies are wasteful. And a simple, if you kill it, you have to eat it philosophy seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Side note, if you're a vegetarian, you'd need to know which vegetables are safe to eat, because salads aren't going to jump onto your plate either.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right, so I guess there's a lot of us who could, you know, there's a few of those on the list that we won't be able to check off just yet. We'll have to work on that. But it's a great list, and he's absolutely right. Those are the foundations. I mean, if a guy knows how to do those, he'll be responsible in life.
And he can protect and secure his family.
Yeah, absolutely. And what better thing for a man to do? Dennis, do we have time left for the one about the thick brains?
Well, we sure do. What do we got, about 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, we got 2 minutes. And this is interesting because, you know, I've always known that there's a lot of thick skulls out there, but I didn't know there were any thick brains out there. Tell us what this is all about.
I've been called fathead before, and now I understand why.
No, the thick skulls I was referring to, you know, liberal politicians, but mainly.
This is from the journal JAMA Psychiatry. JAMA is the Journal of American Medical Association.
Right. This is like one of the this is like one of the top dogs, right? The journals in medicine. Go ahead.
If it's in JAMA, it has been probably very thoroughly vetted and has some merit. And they have found that people who describe themselves as religious or spiritual have thicker brains, meaning their cerebral cortex is thicker than average, and that could protect them against depression. Now, it suggests a link between brain thickness and spirituality, but it really doesn't say whether there's a cause or an effect. In other words, do people with thicker brains tend to be more spiritual, or do people who are spiritual develop a thicker cerebral cortex.
So, Dennis, what you're saying is the next time a liberal tells me that I'm thick, I should take it as a compliment?
Definitely should.
Good. I'll remember that.
You are one of the thickest people I know. Just
I guess
their arguments are always thin, Steve.
Sometimes density has its advantages, huh?
Yeah, that's true. And, if you think of it yourself, anytime you start thinking positive, you start feeling better.
Sure.
Vice versa. Yeah. When you start feeling down and depressed, anything gets you depressed. It's a cycle in both directions.
Well, you know,
that's my resolution for 2014.
Yeah.
Is not to think
things in a more positive way.
You want to fatten up your brain, huh?
That's right.
Be thick.
Thin out my belly at the same time. Yeah.
I love it. Great work, Nostradamus. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you then.
All right, Steve, thanks again for coming in tonight.
Thank you, gentlemen. Happy New Year again.
Same to you, sir. It's always a pleasure. And, folks, don't forget, we'll be here tomorrow.
You got that for sure, Chris. Now, I'm thinking I'm going to go home and do some push-ups with my head. And maybe that'll be a charge it up there. And I'm not that thick-headed, but I will be back tomorrow night along with Chris and the rest of the gang. We are the American Adversaries. See you.
Bye, everybody.
Talk 660 WORL. Altamont Springs, Orlando. 660 WORL.com. Division of Salem Communications. On the NASDAQ is SA.